Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Rebellious Tide by Eddie Budell Tan. Narrated by David Lee Huynh. Petit Géant. 1. Young once.
I used to be beautiful, she said.
It was true. Sebastien grew up surrounded by the evidence of his mother's beauty. Ruby kept most of these faded photographs in boxes stacked on the top shelf of her closet, a hidden archive of tattered prints that spanned decades. Her favorites were trapped in cheap frames throughout their apartment. Sebastien had them etched in his memory, having seen them every day for as long as he could remember. The young woman was striking. Every image preserved the delicate curve of her neck and the clarity of her eyes. Her hair was worn the same way in each one, a heavy veil black as a nun's habit. She began to smile more with time, as though age softened whatever caused her younger self to be so serious. You're still beautiful. Sebastien looked into her yellowed eyes to show he meant it. She laughed, unconvinced. Ruby Goh was no longer the vital woman who stared at them from the photographs. Her body sank into the shallow canyon that had formed in her mattress. A pile of blankets concealed her bloated stomach and swollen legs. She wore her long hair in the same way, but the color had faded over time.
I'm 52, and I look like I've been dead for years, she said. There are women my age running marathons. I'm lucky if I can make it to the toilet in time.
Her body shook as her laughter became a fit of coughs. Sebastien handed her a glass of water, shaking his head. Don't talk like that. The negativity doesn't help.
If you think I'm still hoping for a miracle, forget it. Positive thinking won't do a damn thing. Sometimes the only thing left to do is laugh or cry. Let me laugh.
A year ago, Sebastien would have argued, but now he knew she was right. The chances of a liver donor materializing in time were slim. He flashed a disapproving look at his mother before moving one of his little black discs across the checkered board. The only similarity Ruby could find between her native country of Singapore and her adopted home of Quebec was their version of checkers. There were more squares and pieces on the board than the more common variation of the simple game. They used to play on a flimsy sheet of cardboard with the squares colored in with felt pen. Dented bottle caps had been the checkers. When Sebastien started working during high school, he used his first paycheck to surprise his mother with a proper version of the game from the local hobby store. She was thankful for the gift, but preferred their makeshift board.
Bad move!
Ruby let out a gleeful shriek as she thrust one of her white discs over two of Sebastien's, palming the captives. He grabbed fistfuls of hair and moaned in disbelief.
I didn't see that coming.
She rested against the deflated pillows that lined her headboard and smiled.
I used to play this with your father, you know. He would say the exact same thing.
He looked up, attentive, though it wasn't her first time offering this same glimpse into her past. Ruby rarely talked about his father. The man he had never met was a phantom whose absence still haunted their lives. He lived on in the rooms of Ruby's memory, where he held her face in his hands, kissed the back of her neck. Her mind housed a projection room that played a continuous reel of distant scenes, remembered or imagined, that always ended with his father vanishing before it started from the beginning again. I guess you had lots of time to kill on board that ship, she nodded, the smile lingering along her lips. Was he as terrible a player as I am?
I would always beat him, she said.
Her eyes were alive, less clouded than usual.
That's why he fell in love with me. He wasn't used to losing.
Sebastien had collected shards of information from Ruby's stories over the years to form a picture of his father. The man was charismatic and bold, a young sailor who loved the sea more than any woman. He had the angular features and thick tangle of hair that his ancient Greek ancestors chiseled into stone, traits that were passed on to his son. There were inconsistencies in Ruby's stories. Sometimes he was a gentle lover who adored her. Other times he was an ill-tempered brute who viewed her as disposable. Sebastian was clever enough to know that both versions must have been true. "I was young once," she went on, her eyes clouding over again. "And I was beautiful. He promised to take me to France. I couldn't believe it. A poor girl from Singapore sailing away to Europe with a handsome foreigner. It was like a dream."
Sebastian had heard this story before. He used to let his mother indulge herself in the fog of these memories. The older he became, the more he realized the danger of selecting the memories that lived on and those that got buried. Ruby did this ruthlessly, as though choosing which photographs to display and which to hide in boxes.
"It was a dream," he said, moving one of his pieces aimlessly forward on the checkerboard.
"Excuse me?"
"It wasn't real. He was never going to take you to France."
"He was going to," she said,
but Sebastian couldn't listen to any more. "You've never been to France because he didn't take you there," he interrupted, his tone steady and factual. "He brought you here to this nowhere town instead. He got you pregnant, then he left. He ran away like a coward." Ruby shook her head. The two captured discs were still clutched in her hand.
"That's not what happened."
"Then tell me, what happened? Why did he leave?" Sebastian knew he wasn't likely to get any answers. The questions always upset her, so he had learned to fill in the blanks himself. He hoped one day Ruby would provide an explanation that would redeem his father. Until then, the young foreign sailor who abandoned his mother would remain guilty. This was Sebastian's own private mythology.
"Things didn't go according to plan," she said as she wrapped a blanket around her thin frame.
"You used to make him sound like some sort of hero. I wanted to be just like him, to sail the world, wake up every day in a different port. But he was no hero, was he? He was selfish and cruel. That's the truth." He paused, drawing a deep breath.
"We don't need him anyway. We have each other."
He offered her a reassuring smile.
"I made some bad choices, but you know what? I don't regret any of them."
She placed her hand on his warm cheek.
"Those choices gave me you. I will always be proud of that. You should be too."
Sebastian set the checkerboard on the floor and pulled his chair closer to Ruby's bed. Her hands were silk gloves filled with bones as he held them.
"I am proud," he lied.
He leaned forward and kissed her on the forehead.
"It's late. You should get some sleep."
The last image in the projection room of Ruby Go's mind was of Sebastian and his father. They were roughly the same age, two men brimming with such youth they seemed immortal, sitting side by side, laughing. The thought made her smile before sleep washed over her like the ocean's tide. She never woke up. 2. Surprise.
The residents of Petit Géant didn't care for the world outside the town's borders, despite the welcoming signs in English and French at either end of the main road.
The hand-painted porcupines on these signs, their paws waving in the air, were meant to make visitors feel welcome. The truth was, the locals had always been wary of outsiders. No one was more of an outsider than Ruby Go. Imagine the confusion and suspicion the unexpected arrival of the young Singaporean woman must have created 30 years earlier. And she had been pregnant, too, with no husband in sight. The local hair salon was filled with gossip from mouths puckered with distaste. Ruby gave her newborn son a name that would be considered acceptable by the inhabitants of her new home. The name sounded both strange and beautiful to her ears when she first heard it spoken on the radio. Even so, the young child was excluded no less than his mother. Being the outsider's son was a sin equal to being the outsider. No matter how much effort Ruby put into helping him blend in, dressing him in sweater vests from the thrift store and trimming his hair with the kitchen scissors, people would still look at him as though he were a wild animal. This little boy, with the deep green eyes and bronze skin, with hair as black as his mother's, but coiled like a nest of serpents, was like no one they had ever seen before. Back then, Ruby cleaned the homes of Petit Jean while their owners were busy living their lives. She found a sense of purpose in detergent and disinfectant, taking something neglected and making it sparkle. The money was barely enough to cover the bills, even during the busier months, but she enjoyed the work. She loved having the privilege of spending time in these houses. She would look at the portraits on the walls and admire the fine furniture. Sometimes she'd pretend she lived there, tidying up while her husband worked in a fancy office. The only place she didn't like to clean was the Villeneuve house. Pierre Villeneuve worked as a counselor at the town hall. His young daughter was Sébastien's age. "She's sweet as a rock," he had once told his mother. But the lady of the house was the reason Ruby dreaded her weekly appointment. Ruby would arrive with a smile every Wednesday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Overdressed and eager for company, Genevieve Villeneuve would open the door and then follow Ruby from room to room, smoking a cigarette while she supervised.
"I just want to be sure you don't feel tempted to take anything," she said on more than one occasion. "I mean, I'm not saying you're a thief, but I've heard stories about that sort of thing happening."
She would offer generous amounts of feedback on Ruby's performance.
"I pay you good money. I don't want you getting lazy."
Her favorite topic of conversation, though, was her family.
"Chloe and I are so lucky to have Pierre. He works so hard to give us such a good life. I don't know how you single mothers cope. And a wild little boy like that without a father? I just can't fathom it."
Ruby would return home every Wednesday, close her bedroom door, and cry into the red, raw skin of her hands. She knew Genevieve was a silly woman whose opinions didn't matter, but every comment felt like the lash of a whip against Ruby's self-worth. Maybe Genevieve simply spoke what everyone else in town thought. Sébastien would return from school and sit beside his mother with his little hand in hers. It wasn't fair that women like Genevieve Villeneuve could have such power over women like his mother.
"She thinks she's better than you, but she's not," he would tell her.
Ruby would nod and force a smile.
"You're right," she would say, not quite believing it. The weeks went by and every Wednesday was the same.
Finally, Sébastien had had enough.
One night, when he was 9, he slipped out his bedroom window and walked to the tree-lined streets of the wealthy part of town.
The Villeneuve home lay under the moonlight like a sleeping giant. He reached into his backpack, his little hands wrapped around the jagged rocks inside. He didn't stop throwing until the windows were shattered. Now, many years later, Sébastien heard the sound of broken glass as he cracked the eggs against the side of the frying pan, an echo from the past. He tucked the memory back into a crowded corner of his mind. The eggs spilled from their shells and sizzled in the heat of the pan, sunny side up, the way his mother liked them. The cramped apartment with a faded wallpaper and stained ceiling was the only home Sébastien had ever known. It sat directly above the neighborhood's convenience store, in an old two-story building covered in stucco the color of traffic cones. The store had been a laundromat when Sébastien was younger. He would sit on the rusted metal steps of the fire escape outside his window and absorb the scent of detergent like a chemical sauna. It was barely enough space for the two of them, especially as Sébastien got older, but they'd learned ways of simulating privacy. They had their own bedrooms, though the wall they shared couldn't have been made of much more than sawdust and cardboard. Sébastien used noise as a curtain, dialing up the volume of his music when he needed to be alone. The moon-shaped clock on the wall counted the seconds as Sébastien slid the eggs onto a plate. He crossed the linoleum floor of the kitchen, bumping into their faux wood dining table along the way.
"Your breakfast awaits, m'lady," he said, in his best English butler accent.
There was no answer. He glanced at the clock.
It was unusual for Ruby to sleep in so late. "You awake in there?" he asked, with two knocks against the door. "Rise and shine, lazy bum."
He held his ear against the door, but he couldn't hear a thing besides the creep of worry that had a way of altering his senses.
"I'm coming in."
His fingers wrapped around the doorknob as he paused, afraid of what he'd find on the other side. He thought about how silly he'd feel for expecting the worst if his mother was asleep in her bed. He held on to that silly feeling as he pushed open the door. Ruby's bedroom looked exactly as it had the previous night, except for the morning light that slipped through the blinds. She even lay in the same sacrificial pose, cupped by the curves of her mattress. Sebastian set the plate on her desk and stood over the bed.
"Wake up, Mama," he said, although he knew the truth.
She was as cold and still as the morning after remains of a fire.
"Wake up."
His voice was less steady the second time. The pain started out dull, but he could feel it blossoming deep within his chest.
"Wake up. Wake up."
His face was calm as his fingers felt for the missing pulse in Ruby's thin wrist. It occurred to him how funny it was that absence could be felt more strongly than presence. He drew a long breath and swallowed it. The checkerboard was on the floor beside the bed where Sebastian had placed it. The game no longer paused, but abandoned. With a loud exhale, he picked up the plate of eggs and walked briskly out of the room. He stood in the middle of the kitchen for several seconds before throwing the dish against the wall with such force that it snapped cleanly down the middle like two halves of a moon. The sound wasn't satisfying. It was flat and blunt, nothing like the music created by the rocks and shattering windows from many years ago. The pain now clawed at his lungs. He grabbed a chair and lifted it above his head until its wooden legs scraped against the uneven ceiling. With a groan, he swung the chair downward. It crashed against the surface of the kitchen table, creating a pleasing sound. The chair sliced through the air repeatedly until his hands gripped nothing more than a splintered frame of wood.
"What's going on in there?"
The shrill words were accompanied by three beats against the front door that led to the hall.
"Sebastian? Ruby? Is everything okay?"
"Everything's fine," he shouted back, his voice stuttering. "We're fine, Elise. Sorry for the noise."
His neighbor hesitated, but the sound of her slippers could be heard moments later as she padded down the hall. He looked at the floor. What remained of the kitchen table resembled the beginnings of a bonfire. The clock ticked steadily as he made his way back into the bedroom. One look at his mother lying motionless in bed was all he could handle. He walked into her closet and closed the creaky doors behind him. It was cool and dark inside. He'd always found it comforting to curl up in a corner of the closet, although he usually took refuge in his own, not Ruby's. He had forced himself to outgrow the habit. Men mustn't hide from their problems, he knew that. But he allowed himself this relapse into his past behavior. He wasn't strong enough to resist it this time. He thought he had been prepared for his mother to die. As the weeks and months had trickled by, he could almost see the life escaping through her pores. He'd remained positive for years, but the hope had drained out of him. Eventually, he knew his energy would be better spent preparing for what was to come. It wasn't enough. He'd underestimated his capacity to feel. Smashing the kitchen table had been an effective release, but he couldn't ignore the burning in his lungs. He knew it wasn't just grief and shock and loneliness. It was rage. He had kept it hidden inside for years.
It was fed by every muttered insult, every Christmas they couldn't afford, every time his mother embarrassed herself trying to fit in with the other townspeople.
Most of all, the rage had grown whenever he saw that his mother wasn't also consumed by it. More than anyone else, she had earned the right to be angry. As he sat on the closet floor with his knees tucked against his chest, he pictured his rage and saw it had a face not so different from his own. It was the face of the man who had left them there, alone, empty-handed, in a town that would never be home. Kostas Korakis was his name. Sebastian had made that discovery several years earlier. He'd thought it was a strange combination of letters when he first saw it, an unfamiliar union of hard angles and gentle loops. The sound was even stranger when he said it aloud. Kostas Korakis. Kostas Korakis. He'd repeated the name until it began to make sense, until it sounded like it could belong to a person who shared his blood. His girlfriend at the time, Sophie, was throwing a party.
"The theme is Belle Époque," she had said. "Just come dressed French."
Sebastien would never normally rummage through his mother's closet, but he had remembered she owned a felt beret that would work with his outfit. He found a wide rectangular box on the floor of the closet. Inside was something he'd never seen before. A white jacket with brass buttons. A single golden stripe with a diamond shape in the center was emblazoned on the epaulette of each shoulder. He knew immediately that it must have belonged to his father. It fit perfectly. Standing in front of Ruby's bedroom mirror, Sebastian saw that the jacket could have been tailored to his athletic frame. It smelled musty, like dust and dampness, and the color had yellowed over time, but it was in good shape considering its age. As he ran his hand down the inside lining, he felt something sewn into the fabric. Embroidered across a black badge were bold white letters, K. Korakis. After carefully replacing the jacket where he had found it, Sebastian spent the next several days discovering who his father was. He didn't go to Sophie's party. He locked himself in his room with his laptop and followed the clues. It didn't take him long to find an officer in the Hellenic Merchant Marine named Kostas Korakis. This man had dedicated his youth to sailing the world on Greek cargo vessels, but had spent the past 10 years in greater comfort aboard passenger ships. One look at the man's angular face and deep green eyes told him everything he needed to know. Sebastian kept this to himself. He certainly wasn't going to say a word to Ruby. Every now and then, he would check in on his father online. Kostas had a wife and 2 young children. They would huddle together closely in each new picture as though protecting themselves from outside forces. Sebastian watched as the boy and girl grew a little older each year. Their smiles always seemed staged. The itch to reach out to this man shamed him. He had never longed for a father, even though as a child he sometimes wondered why his family was so much smaller than others. Curiosity grew with age, then transformed itself into blame when he became more perceptive of his mother's loneliness. Still, he'd always refused to let his father hold more space in his consciousness than the man deserved. He would almost believe himself whenever he told Ruby they didn't need that man in their lives. When Sophie asked if he'd consider meeting this sailor with a strange name, Sebastian's answer was a definitive no. He had enough money saved by then for a plane ticket to Europe, but it would have been an irresponsible expense with Ruby's condition worsening. Besides, what would be the point? And so, it bothered him that these images on the screen had consumed so much of his imagination. What would be the harm of sending a little message? The response could be surprising, he thought to himself. He resisted in the end, knowing Kostas was unaware that his forgotten son was watching over him, allowed Sebastian to claim some sort of power he was never born with. "I know who you are," he would whisper to the image on the screen. That was enough for him back then. Now, as he sat in the protective darkness of his mother's closet, he wondered if it was still enough. Sebastian needed an explanation that Ruby had never been able to offer. He used to dismiss his father as being too weak and too cruel to take responsibility for an unexpected pregnancy, but he knew the truth couldn't be that simple. It didn't fit his mother's stories. A romance with a young foreign sailor, the promise of a voyage to Europe. Then, an unexpected separation on a cold Quebec morning. That had been the only thing Ruby would say about that day. She remembered the cold. The only way to learn why that man fled 30 years ago would be to meet him. But it wasn't just an answer Sebastian wanted. There was something darker stirring in his belly. His hands reached out blindly until they touched the rectangular box in the opposite corner. He pushed open the closet doors with the box clutched in one arm. The scent was familiar as he pulled the jacket over his t-shirt. He examined himself in the full-length mirror beside Ruby's dresser, not able to deny liking the way the uniform looked on him. The shade of white was sad with age, but the gold embroidery on his shoulders shone brightly. There was a faint spatter of orange drops across the breast, and he wondered if the color had been redder 30 years earlier. Dozens of eyes stared at him from the picture frames that lined the shelves and walls. Since his earliest memories, his mother had been a strong woman who loved to laugh as much as she loved to argue. Even as her body slowly betrayed her, she'd never let herself be diminished. But the earlier photographs revealed a more cautious woman, one whose eyes were mistrustful and whose lips refused to lie. She gazed at her grown son, wearing the mysterious man's jacket. She knew the truth. Sebastian picked up one photograph in a pewter frame. Although he'd been very young, he remembered that day at a local petting zoo. The image captured Ruby as she laughed uninhibitedly while her son held a baby goat barely smaller than himself. Relief came to his red, itching eyes as he blinked away the tears. Sophie Lamoureux took Sebastian's virginity in her bedroom when they were 18. As his face hovered above hers, sweat pooling in the shallow wells of his collarbone and hair draped around his head like Spanish moss, she decided she would love him, despite his background. Their relationship didn't officially begin until she returned to Petit Géant after several years of university in Montreal. It was her little rebellion, dating Sébastien Go. She saw herself as the benevolent princess, choosing true love with an outcast over the preordained comfort of her mother's expectations. It was a story she loved to believe, even more than she loved Sebastian himself. Reality was less flattering. Their relationship was often punctuated by indefinite separations as frequent as the solstice. Her friends would exchange glances and knowing smirks during these periods of respite. "We knew this would happen," she imagined them saying, "if only she had listened." With every spiteful remark she would later regret, with every ambivalent shrug of her shoulders, she held on tighter. Sophie had given up too much and invested too many years for this gamble not to pay off. Sebastian had ended things 6 weeks earlier. "We've tried for years to make it work. It's run its course," is how he had put it. She begged him to reconsider as she'd done in the past, but she knew it was different this time. It was an anticlimactic end to so many years of intensity. If she were honest with herself, she would have known they were doomed from the start. A romance like theirs wasn't meant to last. They never stood a chance. Today, though, was special. "He should be here any minute," Sophie said as she scanned the garden, her hands outstretched in front of her as though she were tiptoeing away from a bear. It was a surprise party for Sebastian's 29th birthday. A wooden dining table, long enough to seat 30, stood in the middle of her mother's backyard. It was set with linen napkins and polished silverware. Spring flowers spilled out of ceramic vases. Champagne was being chilled in silver buckets of ice. The guests were scattered outside the entrance to the solarium that protruded from the house. The mood was tense. Everyone but Sophie seemed to know this was a bad idea. The party was being organized weeks before they broke up. She could have canceled it, but instead chose to forge ahead. It could be a chance to redeem herself, to prove her love for him. She viewed the death of Ruby as another opportunity. It was a tragedy, of course, and Sophie was saddened by it, but it was also a path back to Sebastian. Now more than ever, he needed someone to turn to, and she had gladly allowed him to find comfort in her arms. He sobbed against her neck the day it happened. She wouldn't fail him this time. After 2 weeks of grieving, Sebastian would need something to celebrate. "He's coming,"
she whisper growled, waving her hands as if swatting flies.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?